Chapter 17. Dirk drove Sarah to the state public health lab on Fir Crest campus, where they carefully transferred the fragmented bomb casing into a small working lab room. After some chiding for bringing an explosive into the building, a jovial, slightly balding research scientist named Hal agreed to examine the fragment after the conclusion of a staff meeting. "Looks like a long lunch is in order." "Where shall we go?" Sarah asked. "I know a quiet spot with a nice water view," Dirk replied with a mischievous grin. "Then take me away in the green machine," she laughed, climbing into the turquoise Chrysler. Dirk drove the car out of the laboratory's narrow parking lot, easing past a familiar-looking black Cadillac CTS that sat with its engine running. Exiting the campus grounds, he drove south past Seattle's bustling downtown, then turned west, following a road sign to Fauntleroy. Reaching the water's edge of Puget Sound, Dirk turned into the Fauntleroy ferry terminal, then steered the Chrysler up a loading ramp and onto the car deck of a waiting automobile ferry. As he parked the Chrysler amidst several rows of tightly packed commuter cars, Sarah reached over and squeezed his hand tightly. "A ferry boat, snack bar? Donuts and coffee?" she inquired. "I think we can do better than that. Let's go upstairs and look at the view." Sarah followed him up a stairwell that emptied onto the open upper deck, where they found a vacant bench facing the northern expanse of Puget Sound. A loud blast from the ferry's horn and a gentle nudge beneath their feet told them they were on their way, as two 2,500-horsepower diesel engines gently pushed the 328-foot vessel away from the dock. It was a crystal-clear day on the Sound, the kind that reminded local residents of why they endure the long, drizzly Pacific Northwest winters to call the area home. In the distance, the Cascade and Olympic mountain ranges sparkled along the horizon, almost shimmering against an azure-blue sky so intense it felt close enough to touch. The Seattle downtown cut the skyline in a brilliant reflection of steel and glass, with the landmark Space Needle rising like a futuristic monolith from a George Jetson cartoon. Dirk pointed out a half dozen other ferries plying their human cargoes about the harbor and watched as they dodged large freighters that cruised along the international shipping lanes. It was only a 15-minute ride to their destination off Vashon Island, and when the boat's captain began aligning the ferry to dock, Dirk and Sarah made their way back down to the Chrysler. As he held the door open for Sarah to climb into the passenger seat, Dirk glanced down the row of cars parked behind him. Sitting four spaces behind them, a black Cadillac sedan caught his eye. The same black Cadillac that had been parked with the motor running at the public health lab. And, he now recalled, the same Cadillac that he had seen during his drive around Fort Stevens. "I think I see a friend parked behind us," Dirk said calmly to Sarah. "Think I'll go back and say hello. I'll be right back." Strolling casually down the row of cars, he observed two Asian men sitting in the Cadillac staring directly at him. As he approached the driver's side door, he suddenly leaned down and stuck his face into the open window. "Excuse me, fellas, do you happen to know where the restroom is?" Dirk asked in a hick voice. The driver, a heavy-set goon with a bad crew cut, looked straight ahead, refusing to make eye contact, and slowly shook his head. Dirk looked for and found a slight protrusion under the man's coat near his left armpit, the telltale sign of a holstered weapon. Across the car's interior, the accomplice in the passenger seat showed none of the shyness of the driver. A skinny man with long hair and a stringy goatee glared back at Dirk with a menacing grin, a half-smoked cigarette dangling from his lips. On the floorboard between his feet was a large leather case, which concealed something more than a calculator and cell phone, Dirk surmised. "Find your friend?" Sarah asked when he returned to the Chrysler. "No," Dirk replied, shaking his head. "I was quite mistaken." A long blast from the ship's horn, followed by two short blasts, announced that the ferry was docking, and moments later Dirk drove the Chrysler out of the covered car deck and into the bright sunshine. Crossing over the ferry ramp, he drove down a long pier, then turned out of the ferry complex and on to Vashon Island. Situated on the lower end of Puget Sound, Vashon Island is a 37-square-mile scenic haven located just minutes from the congested hubbub of Seattle and Tacoma. Reachable only by boat, the island has maintained a quiet, rural tranquility far removed from its metropolitan neighbors. Strawberry and raspberry fields dot the lush, wooded landscape, which is inhabited by a bohemian mix of farmers and computer intellectuals seeking a slower pace than that of city life. Lowering the convertible top so that they could better enjoy the sights and smells of the landscape, Dirk drove south along the Vashon Highway, away from the ferry terminal at the northern tip of the island. Observing in his rearview mirror, he watched the black Cadillac exit the ferry terminal and fall in line behind him, maintaining a half-mile cushion behind the old car. They continued motoring south for several miles, past quaint cabins and farmhouses interspersed amongst thick groves of pine trees. "This feels marvelous," Sarah gushed, stretching her arms above her head and feeling the cool wind rush through her fingers. Dirk smiled to himself, having known too many women who despised riding in a convertible because it mussed up their hair. For him, driving fast in a convertible was like riding a storm out at sea or diving on an unexplored wreck. It was a little added serving of adventure that made life more fun. Spotting a road sign marked Burton, Dirk slowed and turned east off the highway, backtracking a short distance on a small side road that led to the tiny hamlet. They meandered past a small group of houses until the road petered out at the drive of a quaint Victorian inn situated right on the water. Built as a summer estate for a Seattle newspaper tycoon at the turn of the century, the three-story structure was agleam in pastel shades of green and lavender. Bright flowers sprouted in large pots and flower boxes wedged everywhere, throwing a vast array of colors to the eye. "Dirk, it's beautiful here," Sarah beamed as he parked the car next to an ornate gazebo. "How did you discover this place?"
"One of our scientists has a summer home on the island. Claims they have the best king salmon in the state here, and I aim to find out."
Dirk led Sarah to an intimate restaurant at one end of the lodge that continued the Victorian decor theme. Finding it nearly empty, they took a table next to a large picture window that faced east across the sound. After ordering a local Chardonnay, they admired the view across Quartermaster Harbor to a smaller island named Maury. To the southeast, they could see Mount Rainier standing majestically in the distance.
"Reminds me a little of the Grand Tetons," Sarah said, fondly recalling the craggy peaks of northwest Wyoming. "I used to ride horses for miles around Lake Jackson at the base of the Tetons."
"I bet you're a pretty fair downhill skier as well," Dirk ventured.
"I banged up a few sets of skis growing up," she laughed.
"How'd you know?"
"Jackson Hole is right around the corner. Skied it once a few years ago. Terrific snow."
"I love it there," Sarah gushed, her hazel eyes glistening.
"But I am surprised to hear that you've been to Jackson. I didn't think that a NUMA Special Projects director was allowed to leave sight of the ocean."
It was Dirk's turn to laugh.
"Only on my annual vacation. The Gobi Desert happened to be booked that year," he grinned. "So tell me, how did a nice girl from Wyoming end up working at the Centers for Disease Control?"
"It's because I am a nice girl from Wyoming," she cooed.
"Growing up on my parents' ranch, I was always nursing a sick calf or mending a lame horse. My dad always said I was a softy, but I just loved being around animals and trying to help them. So I studied veterinary medicine in school, and after bouncing around a few jobs, was able to snag the field epidemiologist job with the CDC. Now I travel the world preventing disease outbreaks and helping sick animals. And I even get paid for it." She smiled.
Dirk could tell her compassion was genuine. Sarah had a warm heart that seemed to resonate through her. If not employed by the CDC, she would probably be off running a dog shelter or helping a wildlife rescue, with or without a paycheck. Gazing at Dirk with tender eyes, he was glad she was here with him now. A waiter appeared to spoil their intimacy, but brought a gourmet meal to the table. Dirk enjoyed a mesquite-grilled king salmon fillet, while Sarah dined on Alaskan weathervane scallops she deemed so tender they melted in her mouth.
After sharing a fresh raspberry cheesecake for dessert, they took a short stroll hand in hand along the water's edge. Dirk kept an eye out for the two men in the Cadillac, whom he finally observed parked a few blocks away in Burton.
"It's gorgeous here, but I guess we should be getting back," Sarah said with disappointment.
"We should have the blood test results on your sick crewman by now, and Hal probably has your bomb canister analysis completed."
As they approached the car, she turned and hugged Dirk.
"Thanks for a lovely lunch," she whispered.
"Kidnapping beautiful women in the afternoon is a specialty of mine," he smiled, then took her in his arms and gave her a long, passionate kiss. She responded by wrapping her arms around him, squeezing the back of his waist tightly. Easing the car out of the parking lot, Dirk meandered slowly down the one-lane thoroughfare of Burton. He glared as he drove by the Cadillac parked in a side alley, the two men waiting for them to pass. As he watched in the rearview mirror, he was somewhat surprised to see the black sedan turn and follow immediately behind him. There was no more pretense of an invisible tail, Dirk thought, which was not a good sign. The Cadillac followed behind until they reached the intersection of the Vashon Highway. As he stopped to turn, Dirk glanced again in his mirror. He could see the passenger with a goatee reaching down at his feet and pulling something out of the leather case. A sick feeling hit him in his stomach, and without an instant's hesitation, he mashed down on the accelerator. With tires squealing, the Chrysler whipped onto the highway and sped north.
"Dirk, what are you doing?" Sarah asked with a bewildered look as she was pushed back into the seat.
In an instant, the Cadillac screeched onto the highway behind them, sending a spray of gravel flying through the air. This time, the Cadillac was not intent on following behind the old Chrysler, but nosed into the vacant oncoming traffic lane in order to pull alongside. "Get down on the floor," Dirk yelled at Sarah as he watched the black car approach in his side mirror. Confused but comprehending the tone in his voice, Sarah slipped down into the cavernous footwell of the Chrysler and rolled into a ball. Dirk eased off the accelerator and looked to his left as the Cadillac pulled rapidly alongside. The passenger window was rolled down, and the young tough grinned sardonically at Dirk. Then he raised an Ingram Mach-10 submachine gun from his lap and leveled it at his head. The gunman may have been younger, but Dirk's reflexes were faster. By the time the killer's finger pulled the trigger, Dirk was already standing on the brakes. A short burst of fire ricocheted harmlessly across the hood of the Chrysler as it suddenly fell back of the speeding Cadillac in a cloud of burnt rubber. The Chrysler's narrow tires screeched in protest as the wheels locked up for a moment before Dirk eased off the brakes. He paused a second, waiting for the Cadillac to react, then saw what he was waiting for. As the brake lights of the Cadillac lit up, he punched the push-button automatic transmission into second gear and stomped the accelerator to the floorboard. A flood of raw gas charged down the throats of the Chrysler's twin four-barrel carburetors, spraying a gush of combustible fuel to the hungry 392 cubic inch Hemi motor. Packing over 380 horsepower, the Chrysler 300D was the fastest and most powerful production car in the country in 1958. Showing no signs of its age, the big Chrysler got up and roared off down the road like a charging rhinoceros. The would-be assassins were caught off guard by the suddenly accelerating Chrysler and swore at each other as the big green car shot by like an arrow. The gunman made an attempt to fire another burst, but was too late with his aim, emptying the clip of the burp gun uselessly into the woods. With no oncoming traffic, Dirk cut to the left lane after passing the Cadillac, making it more difficult for the passenger side gunman to aim his weapon.
"What's happening? Why are they shooting at us?" Sarah cried from the floor.
"Some relatives of our old pals in Alaska, I'm betting," Dirk yelled over the roar of the engine as he upshifted into third gear. "Been following us for some time now."
"Can we escape?"
Sarah asked with fear in her voice.
"We can hold our own on the straightaways, but they'll gain on us in the curves. If we can get close to the ferry landing and more people, they should back off," he replied, hoping his words would hold true. The Chrysler had opened a wide gap between the two cars, but the Cadillac was inching closer. A narrow bend in the road forced Dirk to ease off the gas slightly in order to keep the 4,500-pound Colossus on the road, allowing the lighter and more nimble Cadillac to gain precious feet. The gunman, angry and undisciplined, began emptying a second clip in a rage, shooting wildly at the car. Most of the bullets zinged harmlessly into the Chrysler's trunk, creating a sieve-like montage of small round holes. Dirk hunched low in the driver's seat and weaved the car randomly back and forth across the road to avoid presenting a stable target. "How much farther?" Sarah asked, still hugging the carpeted floor. "Just a couple of more miles." "We'll make it," Dirk replied, throwing a confident wink towards her. But internally, Dirk cursed himself. He cursed that he had placed Sarah in such a position of danger and had not called for help earlier when he knew he was being followed. And he cursed that he was unarmed, having no weapon at his disposal to fight back with other than a nearly 50-year-old car. Like a vulture stalking its prey, the black Cadillac mimicked every move of the Chrysler, trying desperately to close the gap between the two speeding vehicles. As the cars entered a long, straight stretch of the Vashon Highway, Dirk looked down and saw the speedometer needle tickling 125 miles per hour. A blue pickup truck approached from the opposite direction, and Dirk eased into the right lane, holding the accelerator firmly to the floor. The Cadillac's driver, unduly intent on overtaking the Chrysler, didn't notice the rapidly approaching truck at first and swerved harshly to the right at the last second, braking reflexively in a slight panic. The move allowed the Chrysler to gain a few more precious feet of pavement and elicited a stream of profanities from the frustrated gunman. But Dirk's temporary dominance was about to expire. The Vashon Highway began a series of curves and bends at the northern end of the island before it dropped down to the ferry terminal, and the racing advantage turned from speed to road handling. Coming hard off the long straightaway, Dirk braked hard into a sweeping left curve, fighting vigorously to keep the big convertible on the road. The more agile Cadillac easily made up lost ground and was soon within a few yards of Dirk's bumper. Once more he heard the sputter of machine gun fire and ducked his head down low. A burst of fire shattered into the windshield in front of him, turning the glass into a maze of pockmarked cracks and holes. One round came in low, and Dirk could feel it nearly graze his cheek as it whizzed by before smashing into the dashboard. "I already shaved once today, you bastards," he grumbled, his anger overcoming any feelings of fear. As he flung the Chrysler into the next turn, the old-fashioned bias-ply tires screeched loudly, leaving a smoking black trail along the roadway. The gunman, having already exhausted two clips, began firing more cautiously to conserve his remaining ammunition. Waiting until the Chrysler entered a right turn, he then peppered the car with quick, point-blank bursts. Foolishly neglecting to shoot out the tires, he maintained his aim on the car's cockpit. Inside, Dirk and Sarah were showered with a continuous deluge of broken glass, plastic, and metal shards as streams of bullets ripped into the interior. Dirk did his best to guide the car down the center of the road, glancing repeatedly at his side mirrors to ensure the Cadillac didn't accelerate alongside for a better kill shot. Several times he veered the Chrysler sharply to one side, nearly smashing the front end of the Cadillac before its driver backed down and maintained a 5-foot buffer off his tail. Dirk felt like a boxer in the ring, ducking and weaving his head and body up, down, and side to side in order to see the road while avoiding a rain of lead. He cringed while sliding the car through a right turn as he watched a ribbon of holes appear in a neat line down the hood. The burst punctured the radiator, sending a white plume of steam hissing out the grill and hood. Time was short now, he realized. Without coolant, the engine would overheat and seize up. He and Sarah would then be easy pickings. As they approached the northern tip of the island, he tried a last gambit. Approaching a narrow left turn ahead, Dirk eased into the center of the road and slowed slightly to pull the Cadillac in close. Then, with both feet on the pedal, he stomped on the brakes as hard as he could. Through the screaming tires and cloud of burnt rubber, the Cadillac kissed the back of the Chrysler hard before its driver slammed on the brakes. But his gamble to decimate the front end of the Cadillac failed. The Chrysler's ancient drum brakes were no match for the Cadillac's four-wheeled disc anti-lock braking system, and the newer car nearly came to a stop while the big Chrysler was still skidding down the road. The Cadillac's driver realized the ploy and kept a healthy separation distance now. Dirk let off the brakes and jammed on the accelerator, hoping to keep making ground. There was little left he could do now. The two cars had reached the top of the last rise on the northern section of the island. From there, the road gradually snaked downhill toward the water's edge, passing a few lanes of shops and houses before terminating at the ferry landing. Dirk noticed a small stream of cars beginning to dot the highway from the opposite direction, recent emigrants from a ferry stop, he surmised. Despite the additional traffic on the road, the machine gun firing from behind continued. The assassins had crossed the line and were bent on killing Dirk and Sarah regardless of who got in their way. Dirk gave Sarah a quick glance and forced a grin. Her soft eyes showed a mixture of both fear and trust. Trust that he would somehow find a way to save them. He gripped the steering wheel tightly, more determined than ever to shield her from harm. But there were only seconds to act. The old Chrysler, which now resembled the remains of a B-2 bomber target, was clearly on its last legs. Smoke billowed from under the hood, accompanied by a throbbing melody of knocks and groans from the nearly spent motor. Sparks flew from beneath the frame, where a broken exhaust pipe scraped the pavement with a torturous grind. Even the tires had generated flat spots from the hard braking and thumped out of round. The temperature gauge, Dirk noted, had been firmly pegged in the red for several minutes now. Above the roar, he could hear the blast of a ferry horn just ahead as they wound closer to the water. From behind, the squeal of the Cadillac's tires and the peppering sound of machine gun fire rattled in his ears. The big Chrysler suddenly lurched as the Hemi engine began to mortally overheat. Dirk's eyes raced over the landscape, searching for a sheriff's car, a bank that might employ an armed guard, any sort of help he might solicit as a last means of defense. But all he saw was quaint little bayside homes with small flower gardens. Then, looking down the hill towards the approaching ferry terminal, he had a thought. Highly improbable, he figured, but at this point they had nothing to lose. Sarah looked up and noticed a look of confident resolve suddenly appear on his face. "What is it, Dirk?" she yelled above the din. "Sarah, my dear," he replied assuredly, "I think our ship has come in."